Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for this Monday, May 6th. I'm Alan Chartok. Support for Medical Monday comes from Saratoga, OBGYN at Myrtle Street, and the new physician midwife pregnancy care model at Saratoga Hospital, saratogahospital.org, for more information. Joining us on this Medical Monday is Dr. David Steckman. He's a cardiac electrophysiologist at Albany Medical Center. Dr. Steckman diagnoses and treats heart rhythm disorders. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. David Steckman, your calls all coming up on the Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Dr. David Steckman. He's a cardiac electrophysiologist at Albany Medical Center. Dr. Steckman diagnoses and treats heart rhythm disorders. He implants and manages cardiac devices such as pacemakers and defibrillators. Dr. Steckman earned his medical degree from New York University Medical Center. Dr. Steckman, welcome to Medical Monday.
Thanks. Pleasure to be here.
To be part of today's conversation, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. So, Doc, I used to have this guy named Vinny in my class. I used to say, Vinny used to, when I have a guest, and he'd raise his hand and say, so, like, what do you do? What do you do?
Oh, you were serious?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Vinny was serious.
So a cardiac electrophysiologist treats electrical problems of the heart, specifically arrhythmias of the heart. So you can think of it in a couple of broad classes, people who have palpitations of the heart, people who have passed out for unknown reasons, and a big chunk of people that I see have atrial fibrillation as one of their main problems.
And what is atrial fibrillation?
That's a good question. It's an unusually irregular and fast heartbeat from the top of the heart. And it can cause a lot of symptoms. It can cause a host of symptoms like shortness of breath, queasiness, fatigue. People feel like they want to pass out sometimes. And it comes with a pretty significant stroke risk as well.
Well, and at what age do you get it?
Most people present later in life. I mean, after the age of 50. But there's more commonly associations with other sort of heart diseases as well. But there's a big category of people who have lone atrial fibrillation, meaning they have atrial fibrillation alone at a younger age as well. So really all ages.
Right. I get it. So what do you do to get rid of it?
There's no absolute cure. We do a lot of work to try to suppress it. So there's a couple ways to approach it. One is to slow the heart rate down. It makes people feel better. Another is to give certain antiarrhythmic medications to keep people in normal rhythm. And the last way is to do a process called ablation, which is what I do at Albany Med, where we essentially cauterize some of the superficial tissue in the heart to prevent that arrhythmia from occurring.
How do you get in there to do that?
Through the vein in the leg.
Wow.
Through the vein up to the heart.
Okay, we're going to get a lot of calls here, folks. We know that it's already happening. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551 to talk to Dr. David Steckman of the Albany Medical Center. All right, so the first thing we want to do is take Jim from Matamoros' call. Jim, what do you got?
What type of batteries are used in devices associated with induced conductivity?
So the types of batteries we deal with in pacemakers and defibrillators, I believe that they are lithium-based batteries.
And like AA or A? Okay, no, thank you, Jim. Okay, and now let's go to Kate in High Falls. All right, Kate in High Falls, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Steckman and Dr. Chartok. I'd like if you could elaborate for our audience about how the pacemaker cells in the heart regulate the heartbeat. I had a run-in with my heartbeat becoming more and more irregular about 5 or 6 years ago. It was coming to a climax where I'd really have to seek some help with it. And I came across some information that pointed me in the direction of suspecting my cordless phone Wi-Fi radiation. And sure enough, when I got rid of that base station, which I'd only had for about 4 years, I'd gotten it from a client who died. When I got rid of that and went back to only a landphone that plugs into the phone line, my heart beat, surely in less than 3 days, I think it was just in a day, settled down, which indicated that my heartbeat
Hey, Kate, we've got an awful lot of people on the phone, so we're going to just let the doctor talk to the point about phones and heartbeats.
Yeah, sure. So, the VGCCs, if you could explain the VGCCs.
Well,
I'm not sure what that is.
I can see by his eyes that he's not quite sure what it is.
But voltage-gated calcium channels and their role in the pacemaker.
Sure. That was a lot of questions all at once.
It's important.
No,
it's
It is a good question. I assume that you don't have a pacemaker, which means there's some concern that perhaps wireless interference is causing or some problems with your heart. I haven't actually heard that specifically. So I'm glad your heart rhythm is better after changing the wireless base to a landline. I think that's good. I couldn't tell you if it was coincidence or related. I'd have to sort of look more into that.
No, it's not coincidence.
Okay, thanks, Kate. Yep. All right, and now on to Mary in Catskill. Mary in Catskill, you're on.
Hi, good afternoon. I was just curious if tachycardia is the symptom of sleep apnea?
Yeah, that's a great question. Sleep apnea is becoming quite a hot topic in our clinic. It is associated with lots of arrhythmias. So atrial fibrillation can be actually treated by treating your sleep apnea. And PVCs, also known as premature ventricular contractions, which is a common cause of extra beats in the heart, can also be treated with sleep apnea treatment. So I actually send the vast majority of my patients in clinic for sleep apnea evaluation these days. Whether they have the sort of bigger necks or not, I'm finding that it's common and it can really help with therapy.
Follow up on that, Mary?
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, no, that's just a thank you. That's a great answer.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Anytime.
Bye now.
Okay, and now on to, by the way, now we're getting rid of a lot of calls. So if you want to call 1-800-348-2551, this is going to be a good chance, maybe a last chance, to get in on the line at a real short point. Let's go to Ed in Wilbraham. Ed in Wilbraham, you're on.
Hello, doctors.
Hi.
What I'm wondering about is I'm about 70 years old, very vigorous in terms of aerobic workouts. Is there any connection with overly vigorous workouts and the development later on of AFib?
It's a good question. The development later on with AFib, there's also...
Well, I mean, you know, could that actually cause it?
Right.
Whereas if I didn't work out so vigorously,
right,
there'd be less of a chance.
So I take care of a fair amount of marathon and triathletes who have more in the way of arrhythmias from the top of the heart than the average person. And the thought is that as the heart changes and modifies to allow for more blood output during those exercises, it stretches a bit. It may even scar a bit, and it can lead to more arrhythmias. They're generally not lethal in any way, and often they're reversible. But not only can exercise over the long term change the heart to cause more arrhythmias, but exercise itself is also a known trigger of arrhythmias too. But it's not for everybody. Some people have the trigger, and some people are just fine. It's like some people take a cup of coffee and have an arrhythmia, and some people can drink all the coffee they want and never have an arrhythmia, who are really lucky.
So, Doc, what is the best preferred method of exercising without bringing on the arrhythmias?
I think if you're exercising already and not bringing on the arrhythmias, you're pretty much fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you find that you're stressing yourself in some way and you're having palpitations, you should definitely get checked out. You should wear some sort of monitor, be checked out.
So 40 minutes a day with no symptoms would be okay?
I think that's great.
Yeah. Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed. And let's go on to Susan in Sunderland. Okay, Susan in Sunderland, your turn. Go.
Hi. I was diagnosed about 10 or so years ago with supraventricular tachycardia.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried several different things, which was doing nothing and seeing, you know, what would happen when episodes came on. Then I took propranolol for about a year and a half, but the episodes sort of kept happening intermittently, and as a teacher, it just got in the way. So now I take 25 milligrams a day of atenolol,
mm-hmm.
and that basically keeps it under control. But I'm wondering if there's a reason why this happens, and if there's any way to get rid of it without medication.
Yeah.
Now, we only have time for a short answer here, Doctor, because we have to go to a break, but go ahead.
So, yes, there's a way to get rid of it. It's with a process called ablation, which is generally about 95% curative for SVTs. And I'm glad the atenolol is helping you. But there is an actual cure out there.
Is that where you do the electrical zap your heart thing?
The electrical zap your heart thing. That's right. That is correct.
And that's 95% good?
For most arrhythmias, it is. Yep.
Okay.
And is that's an in-hospital thing or
usually
outpatient?
Most of my patients go home same day, depending on the complexity.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Susan. Okay, and we're going to take a break now, and then your chances of getting in right now are excellent. I can't believe it, but they are. There's one guy on the phone, and after that, you're in. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Take it away, Zach. So, we are back with Dr. David Steckman of the Albany Medical Center, who is talking to people who want to know more about, the electricity of the heart. So, let us go as soon as I get a person to see here. I'm going to take a chance and go to number one, which is Zach and Lee. Zach, you're on. What's up?
Hi, my fiance, when she goes to work out at the gym, if she works out hard, she has three symptoms, and it happens quite often. She'll either faint, vomit, or just get very nauseous and feel very lightheaded. I guess I had a question to see what you might think that is.
Sure. I'm sorry to hear that. It could be a couple things. Definitely worth checking out with your doc. It could be that the blood pressure gets a little low and she has something called vasovagal or vasomotor symptoms. It's like a reflex. It could be that she's experiencing an arrhythmia as well. It would take a little bit of investigation, but I wouldn't leave that alone.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot. Okay. And now we're going to go number five, Whip in Shelburne Falls. You're on.
Did you say Whip?
That's what I said. Is that who you are?
Oh, great. I never even had to say my name. All right. I have a sister younger who, since high school, has had AV reentrant tachycardia. At least that's what they told her.
Mm-hmm.
She got ablated and it did nothing.
Mm.
And I think they've done it twice. Now they're wondering if it isn't something else. But the short questions are, A, how familial is this thing? And B, would it show up in a treadmill?
Yeah, those are good questions. AV, I'd have to know exactly a little more about the arrhythmia, but there can be some genetic basis to certain arrhythmias. 10 to 15% travel in families. And can it be diagnosed on a treadmill? Only if the symptoms come out with exercise. So it would require a little bit of an investigation. It's not completely unusual for some of these complex arrhythmias to require a couple procedures or a couple ways of looking at it. So I would say if she's still symptomatic, you should keep chugging along to try to find ways to get rid of it.
Well, it just occurred to me that with heart disease in our family, I wondered if regular exams that happen periodically, per age, are enough to screen for it if you have to be looking for it.
It depends on the arrhythmia. Usually you have to look for it, though.
Okay. Thanks very much, Whip. Okay, let's go to JR in Pleasant Valley. JR, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, doctors. I just have a quick question, and I'll hang up to hear the answer.
Don't hang up. Don't hang up. We may want to follow up. Go ahead.
About a year, I get my yearly physicals. I live a very active lifestyle, very healthy lifestyle. I'm a vegan. When I was about 5 years old, I was diagnosed with rheumatic heart fever.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that was solved. They used to give me penicillin shots for that. But last year, my yearly physical and the EKG was diagnosed that I had AFib, so I had the monitor done and all that. Now, I'm curious, as far as my lifestyle, I lift weights, martial arts, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, mixed martial arts, and all that stuff. Should I be concerned, again, as I get older? And the more research I do, I can't find anything that says you can completely cure AFib. So thank you very much for your time, and I'll listen now. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, so, you know, I think atrial fibrillation comes with a lot of other baggage. I think part of it has you have to look at the stroke risk of the arrhythmia, and it's worth looking at everything about you or any patient that has it. And part of it is about the symptoms long term. So I don't think you should leave it alone. Sometimes people aren't very limited by it, but there's certain changes that go on in the heart muscle itself that have to be closely examined. So I think it's worth sort of getting yourself checked out or at least followed very closely for it.
Thank you. And now on to, let's see here. Oh, yeah, Ellen in Catskill. Ellen in Catskill, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, Ellen. Go.
I have a pain.
Sorry, we didn't hear that. Go ahead. Say it again.
I have a pacemaker for a slow heart. Can that be adjusted to include AFib?
So you have a pacemaker for a slow heart, but generally pacemakers don't treat AFib, which is usually a faster heart rate. It can certainly support your heart rate so that medications can be given, and you don't have any symptoms and adverse side effects from the medications because of the pacemaker.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ellen.
Have a good day.
All right. Now I can see that we're going to go to Kay in the Berkshires. Okay, Kay, you're on.
Okay. I just want to know if you have noticed the crease in the earlobe associated with heart problems. I was a barber, and I noticed that all of my heart people had creases in their earlobe.
There actually is a theory that there's a crease in the earlobe that is associated with heart disease. I don't know how well proven it is. It's from a long, long time ago. Not something that I use on my exam, though.
Okay.
Thanks for the question.
Bye, Kate. All right. And now we're going to go to Dennis in Gardner, Massachusetts. Okay, Dennis, your
Taking
turn.
Taking my call.
Go ahead.
Hi. So I'm just, I'm pretty athletic. I'm 73 and very active. And my heart, it's weird. It beats normal. But all of a sudden, it's like a pulse for like a beat or a beat and a half. Then it goes, and then a few beats, and then it's back again. It drives me crazy. It doesn't feel good. I don't like the way it feels.
Yeah.
But it feels like it's going to just stop and not keep start up again. I'm also worried about it.
Yeah.
Know?
No, that's a very common way that people tell me about their problems in the office. It sounds like you're having extra beats, and they can come from the top or the bottom of the heart. There's a lot that we can do to help that. Medicines, lifestyle changes, even this process called ablation to try to cure you of it as well. It's worth wearing some sort of monitor to tease out what it is. And then seeing your doc to try to figure out what the best way to go is. So there's help that we can give you. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome.
All right. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now over to Ed in Barrytown. All right, Ed, your turn.
Hello.
Hi.
I was diagnosed with atrial tachycardia, and then I was diagnosed with SVT tachycardia. So I had it my whole life.
Right.
My heart would beat at like 200 beats a minute for hours and hours and hours. And it became uncontrollable. Like, I was really miserable. So I went to an electrophysiologist, and I had the ablation. She ablated 51 active nodes, whatever that means. That's her language, not mine.
Okay.
And I ended up with a heart block, so I have an AV pacemaker.
Mm.
I feel terrible. when I go for a checkup, I feel the best when they turn the pacemaker off.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I'd have to know more about the situation, but pacemakers certainly don't feel as good as the normal heart rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe it. It feels like there's a battle inside of me for who's controlling the heartbeat.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully you can work that out with your electrophysiologist now.
But David, it's well worth having. In other words,
worth having.
It is well worth it.
Well, when I complain, my girlfriend reminds me how bad it was before I had the ablation.
There you go.
I mean, I was getting it every day. Like, my normal heartbeat became like 180.
That's fast. Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it. Okay, now we are going to go to Susan in Hopewell Junction. Susan.
Hi. I've had palpitations all my life. I finally was diagnosed with PSVT and dual AV nodal pathways. Mm-hmm. They attempted ablation twice, but because they couldn't reproduce the symptoms, they weren't able to complete the procedure.
Sure.
Is it worth trying again?
Yeah, so paroxysmal supraventricular tachycardia, it's the most common arrhythmia that all of us have a chance of getting at some point. Mm-hmm. Often it's tough to bring out. Sometimes you need to go in there and be very light on the anesthesia and keep you a little awake. There are lots of little techniques. I think if you're still suffering from it, it's certainly worth taking another look at it, either with medications or ablation or another EP study. It really depends on sort of your quality of life right now, how you're feeling.
Well, it's annoying. My cardiologist has done monitor studies, and he assures me that what I'm experiencing, even though it's uncomfortable, it's not dangerous. So I'm trying to believe him.
Yeah, no, I see. I would keep working with him. I mean, I think, you know, you keep telling him how you feel, and if there's something there, it might be worth a second look.
You know, Susan raises an interesting question, David, and that is that many of us over our lifetimes have gotten what we call an extra heartbeat. You know, mm-hmm. you have feel that. In my case, it's inevitably described as, annoying but not important. Then there are those which are important, right? Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. I think some of the extra heartbeats, I think importance depends on how much it affects the individual person's quality of life. It can be something that another person that has the same exact thing just doesn't feel, whereas the person sitting next to them feels every beat. So a lot of it is about the individual person. And then there are some arrhythmias that really carry some worse outcomes that need to be looked into more quickly.
Thanks for your call, Susan. Okay. And now, let's see, I'm keeping my eye on the clock. Now we'll go to Jackie in Albany. Jackie in Albany, you're on. Hey,
Hello,
Jackie.
Hello, how are you?
Go.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi, Dr. Steckman. Heard a lot about you.
Hi.
Hi. How do you know if one of my family members always say they're an AFib? We bring them to the hospital, and then when they get there, they take care of it. But how do we know the signs of AFib? Would our family members know?
Sure. That's a great question. So first of all, I'll say some people don't feel the AFib. Those that do can feel palpitations in the chest or fast heartbeats, or a little bit more short of breath that day, or a little more lightheaded or queasy. It really can present with all sorts of signs and symptoms. But I'd say those are probably the most common ones. Fatigue,
okay.
Increased shortness of breath, maybe a little lightheadedness.
And so what exactly is a palpitation again?
So it's an abnormal or uncomfortable feeling, usually in the chest. It can sometimes be in the jaw, sometimes in the arm or the back. It's not a pain, but rather something like a skipped beat.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jackie. Okay. Now let's go to, Marty in North Chatham. Okay. Marty, you go.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm a 57-year-old, and about 12 years ago, when we first put in a powerful wireless internet router, I started to feel flopping in my chest, and I had it checked out, and it turns out to be PACs, premature atrial contractions.
Mm-hmm.
And if I get away from the router or I have, you know, brick or some sort of stone in between, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Even Bluetooth on a phone will irritate it. So my question is, could that ablation be suitable for PACs as well?
Yeah, we do ablations for people who have frequent PACs, especially those people who don't tolerate medicines very well. You have to have a fair amount of them for us to map them and get rid of them successfully. But it sounds like you found your trigger, at least. For some people, it's chocolate. For some people, it's peppermint. And for you, it sounds like this router. So at least you know where to stay away from.
Have you heard of that before? Even being close to towers, if I'm very close to a tower, I will get PAC.
Yeah.
So I'm very sensitive.
Not specifically. Very, very high powered fields maybe, but not in the home.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, very good. I appreciate it. Thank you
so much. Marty.
Have a good day.
Yeah. All right, and now we're going over to Neil in New Hartford. Okay, Neil in New Hartford, you're on.
Well, hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to tell you the news that I am approaching the 20-year anniversary of having a heart attack and a stent put in and having zero problems, symptoms, complications, or anything since then. Your cardiologist did a good job for me.
Good for you. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, any questions? Yeah. Any questions, Neil? No.
Well, I'll tell you, there's been one nagging issue over all these years, and I consulted with several cardiologists and did a lot of research. One of the cardiologists was Dr. Doyle from Albany Med, who you might have heard of. Mm-hmm. And the question was, because I have no symptoms, I've always been athletic and good shape, never smoked, you know, never high cholesterol, none of those problems, why did it happen? And I recently had to change cardiologists because the one I've been seeing retired. This new cardiologist posed a theory about trauma to cardiac arteries from impact. And I've had sports impacts from a collision playing softball, from motorcycle racing and various things. So I was just wondering what your thoughts on that might be.
I mean, I know that impact can cause some arrhythmias. I don't know the literature too well on impact causing coronary disease. It's a sort of a question for the plumbers. But I am glad to hear that you're feeling so well so far after your stenting.
Hey, Neil, thanks for the call. All right. And now we're going to go to Dennis in Bennington. Dennis in Bennington. You're on.
Hello.
Hey, Dennis.
Hi.
This is Dennis. Hi. How are you? About 5 or 6 years ago, I was treated for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and it was a tumor pressing against the heart. Mm-hmm. And it was successfully treated with chemotherapy and radiation. But, of course, the radiation is likely to have scarred the heart, so we're monitoring that. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if it gets to a point where, you know, that type of scarring, does the ablation that you talk about, is that a possible treatment?
Yeah.
And specifically, the condition with my heart is that if I'm exercising, it quickly races up, and it takes a while for it to really come down.
Sure. So a couple things. There are radiation-induced scarring of the heart, and there's a couple ways to diagnose it, and there are arrhythmias that can occur from it. And ablation is an option for patients just like you. So I think sort of following it along just like you're doing is the right thing to do. As for the symptoms, I mean, it would take some investigation. Certainly the normal sinus rhythm that we all have can do what you're describing, as can arrhythmias as well. So I would probably check it out with a cardiologist to start.
Dennis, thank you very much for your call. Okay, here's what. We're a little bit early for the break, but we'll take it anyway. That way we'll have Lorner at the end for the last third. Get it? Get my theory here? So it's 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We've got two people hanging, John in the Pine Bush and Pauline in Rexford, and we'll be right back. And we're back with the great Dr. David Steckman of Albany Medical Center. And it's been a great show so far. We've been moving right along, and we will continue to do that. Okay, so first we'll go to John in the Pine Bush. John in the Pine Bush, you're on.
Hello, Dr. Steckman. Thanks for taking my call. I just was in the hospital last weekend for an AFib episode, mm-hmm. and I always this is the third time I did in the last 2 years. I usually convert. I always convert myself the next day with Cartizan,
mm-hmm.
But now I'm taking Multac.
Yep.
That was the first time last weekend they told me to. I take one pill in the morning, one pill at night, and it seems to be working. Is there any side effects?
So, doctor, for the rest of us, mm-hmm. what's he talking about?
So it seems like the AFib got burdensome enough that they had to up the level of medications to an antiarrhythmic, which is what dronedarone or Multec is.
Gotcha.
It's a medicine used for people that go in and out of AFib, that's paroxysmal, that have pretty normal hearts. It works for some people very well, for others not so much. The side effect profile is low, just a little bit of monitoring of the blood work every once in a while. And if it works, it's great. If not, there are other options.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So far, it's working.
Good.
So,
thanks, John. Appreciate your call. All right. Now, Pauline in Rexford. Pauline, you're on.
Hi. About 4 years ago, I was diagnosed during a regular EKG as having a right bundle branch block.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know much about it or what could have caused it. I've never had any weird symptoms except shortly after I was diagnosed with that, I had some minor surgery. And a few days later, I was standing in my kitchen, and I had the most scary sensation. It felt like everything was going from my head down to my feet and that I was going to pass out.
Mm.
But it didn't last very long, and I've never had it again. I don't know if it's related to the bundle branch block,
and
I don't know how serious something like that is.
So there are two ways to get down from the middle of the heart to the bottom of the heart. One's down the right bundle, and one's down the left bundle. The good news is a little less than 0.5% of the population has a right bundle branch block at baseline, and it means absolutely nothing. So you're likely in that group. But it's worth sort of talking to your doctor about and checking it out. As for the symptoms you're having, it's probably unrelated to the right bundle branch block.
Okay. Could it be from being under anesthesia during an operation? Could that affect you a few days later?
Certainly could be. A little dehydrated. That definitely could cause symptoms
okay.
like that. Yeah. But I would check in on with someone that knows you well.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Pauline.
But nothing to worry about. I'm not going to die tomorrow.
I certainly hope not, no.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Pauline.
Bye.
Okay, and now on to Estelle in Clifton Park. Estelle, you're on.
Hi. I was diagnosed with bradycardia and referred to an electrophysiologist for the possibility of a pacemaker,
mm-hmm.
and doctor said I didn't need it. What determines whether you really need it or not?
Yeah, it's a good question. So broadly, people who get a pacemaker have symptomatic bradycardia, meaning their slow heart rates cause some sort of symptom, and that can be fatigue or dizziness, feeling like you want to pass out or feeling like you can't exercise as much as you maybe used to, or the need for a medicine that you need the pacemaker in order to be treated. So any of those things get you a pacemaker. And then there's a couple unusual arrhythmias that can, slow arrhythmias that can also qualify you for a pacemaker.
But you can live for a long time, right, Doc, with a pacemaker?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Remember Ed Koch had a pacemaker.
Yep. Well, and the battery life's pretty good these days. 12
what kind
15,
of battery?
12 to 15 years.
Just teasing. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank
Estelle.
You.
Appreciate it. Okay, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. And now over to Joe in Otsego County. Joe, your turn.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, good afternoon. I was told, I'm an older person, I was told that ablation for atrial fibrillation, that ablation it's got to be applied when the symptoms are fresh, and also probably because of age. But the fact that the symptoms have to be fresh before it's applied, is that really true?
Yeah, it's a complicated area. I think that the ablation works the best the earlier we catch the AFib, before it starts to change structurally the heart. But that doesn't mean that we can't do a procedure just because you're older or have had atrial fibrillation for a longer period of time. It's sort of everyone gets looked at, and then we decide what works best for the individual. But age itself is not an issue, nor is how long you've had the AFib. The results of the procedure are usually better if you have it a little bit less in duration, though.
But the answer to the question, right, Doc, is that if you don't catch it at that exact moment, you still should come in and do it. to do something.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're suffering from atrial fibrillation at any age, of any duration, you should definitely be evaluated for a lot of reasons.
Thanks for that. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, and now on to Carl in Clifton Park. Carl in Clifton Park, you're on.
Hi. I had an ablation a few years ago. Initially, I was diagnosed with a flutter. And after the ablation, the doctor said, no, it was AVRNT.
Mm-hmm.
I know that what the words are. And I still have some minor palpitations off and on. They kind of start and then subside. I'd just like to hear your explanation of AVRNT and whether I should consider any further treatment with considering that I do still have some palpitation.
Sure. So AVNRT is AV nodal reentrant tachycardia. It's one of the SVTs that we were talking about earlier in the show, one of the more common ones, and it can be cured with ablation, although some people do take more than one attempt, and some people do require medicines as well. So I think it's worthwhile to look and see if you're still having the same arrhythmia and then seek out treatment in order to make it feel better. It's a little circuit in the middle of the heart that shouldn't be there.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, okay,
thank you. I think Carl was calling from under the Hudson River somewhere, but I heard it. Okay, now let's go to Ernest in East Postenkill. Ernest, go ahead.
Hello. Yes, hi. I'm a 63-year-old male who several years ago had some AFib. I had just gone for my yearly exam where he detected it, but I had just come from the gym where I do work out fairly hard, and I was drinking these power drinks that are loaded with I don't know what, mm-hmm. but a lot of caffeine, and I also drank a lot of caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
They did an echo. They did a Holter monitor. Nothing showed up. He put me on the low dose of metoprolol, 25 every day, and half an aspirin. But he tells me that next year when I go in for my yearly, if I've had no problems, he's going to take me off of that
mm-hmm.
and give me nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
I've cut my caffeine by 75%. I mean, is it something I should stay on anyway?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that it sounds like you have a trigger there. I mean, there's a lot of caffeine in those drinks.
Yeah.
Some people have it once and don't have it again. Some people have it once and then they have it again. So it's worth a discussion with whether you should have some sort of monitor to look whether you're having it either silently,
yeah.
Or maybe you're having some symptoms that associate with it. But
I've never been symptomatic. I've never had any. I was shocked
because yeah.
I've never had a problem. And I go to the gym and I came right from the gym right to the office. So I don't know if that was part of it as well. I don't know.
It certainly could be. But I think you should keep monitoring it, because if you're still having it silently, it's worth looking into.
Okay. Thank you, Ernest. Okay. 1-800-348-2551. Well, we can get a few more calls in here. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to, Larry in New Windsor. Larry in New Windsor, your turn.
Well, hello. How are you today?
We're good.
Good.
I have a rather long history of some heart issues. About 12 years ago, I had my mitral valve completely repaired through full open heart surgery by Dr. Oz, and that's been performing well. But the last time I had a colonoscopy, they administered propofol. Mm-hmm. When I came to on the table, the anesthesiologist was nose to nose with me and said, "Is your heart rate always so low?" And I could hardly talk, so I said, "Well, how low is it?" And it had gone down to 30. Subsequently, it's been 2.5 years since then. I've had a low heart rate, not persistent, but occasionally, of 30. Recently, it's gotten better, up to 40. I had a link monitor put in. I mean, under normal conditions, it's like an athletic heart rate.
Right. So people have all sorts of heart rates. A lot of it has to do with whether you're symptomatic at that heart rate or not. It sounds like you're already under good care. You have a long-term monitor implanted under the skin. And so a lot of it is about whether you're feeling symptoms at that certain heart rate of 30s or 40s. If you're not, it's usually okay to continue close monitoring, which sounds like what you're doing.
Good. They had recommended at one point a pacemaker, but then
A year later, I did not get it. A year later, my cardiologist said, well, now we think that a 30 heart rate while you're sleeping is an okay thing.
It is okay for a lot of people.
It is okay?
For a lot of people. It depends on the type of slow heart rate.
Okay, well, Larry, got to let you go. We're almost out of time. I want to try to get everybody in. Thank you very much. Okay, and now go to Catherine in Great Barrington. Catherine, you're on. Go.
Hi. I'm going to talk quickly because I said we're low on time. I, 5 years ago, had a double spontaneous coronary artery dissection at 47 years old with absolutely no risk factors and a heart attack. And since then have developed multiple autoimmune diseases and am having IVIG for the small fiber neuropathy that it caused.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in a research study program up at Boston Mass General. But has anybody ever found a link between the SCAD thing and autoimmune disease?
Okay, first of all, what's SCAD, Doc?
You mean sudden cardiac death, SCD, or?
No. Spontaneous coronary artery dissection.
I think I don't know the data on it. I know there is a relationship between many autoimmune diseases and weakening of the arteries, be it aneurysmal or dissections. It would depend on which type of underlying disease there is. That's sort of a little out of my expertise, but I think that there probably is a link. Whether it's strong or not, I'm not sure.
Thank you very much, Catherine. That's what we had. We're trying to get done, and we only have a couple of seconds more, so we'll go to Chris in Hyde Park. Chris, make it fast. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. My problem, well, I don't know if it's a problem. My heart rate is consistently high in the 80s and 90s. Is that a concern?
I think 80s and 90s, as long as you feel okay, is usually within a standard deviation of the population. So as long as you feel good, heart rate's usually okay.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay, I feel well. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate it. All right, we'll go to Helen in Port Jervis. Helen in Port Jervis, you're on.
Hello.
Hello, go.
Hi. Yes, I had a heart attack March 3rd, 2017. Had a stent put into the large artery behind my heart that feeds my lungs. I since that day quit everything, kind of quit meat, quit smoking cigarettes, changed my life completely, stayed on the meds for all year and a half, which was Plavix, Torvastatin, 80 milligrams, and Metoprolol, and I think that's, and an aspirin a day. Mm-hmm. I consulted with a cardiac thoracic surgeon out in California who is studying the cannabis plant. He put me on 0.5 gram of full extract cannabis oil every single day, took me off of all my meds, and I use magnesium oil spray topical so that I can keep the calcium in my bones so that my platelets, my sticky platelets, don't have anything to stick to form the clot.
Okay, hello, we got
it. And I eat correctly?
Yeah, okay. I think we got the general
picture.
That's
how I treat.
Doctor?
You got it.
Doctor?
What was the question?
Well, the question is, she just wanted you to know what she was doing. You know, do you have any?
No, I'm glad you're doing well so far after a heart attack. But I would be sure to check in with a cardiologist because some of those meds probably you should be on.
Yeah, okay.
I do. Every 3 months, I have blood work done.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
Thanks a lot, Helen. Mm-hmm. All right. And now over to, this is a close one, Jean in Glenmont. Jean, it's got to be really quickly. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Jean. You got to go quick. We're almost out of time.
Okay. Okay, my question is, can you have a AFib, which I did. I was put on medication, Flecainide, basically, and other stuff,
mm-hmm.
and not have any symptoms for about 8 years. My cardiologist was trying to tell me to stop taking the medicine, but since it was working, I didn't really want to. And then with some personal changes, job issues, things going on at home, feeling kind of stressed,
mm-hmm.
I was having attacks at night, which I did wear a monitor to finally prove I was in AFib and not just having anxiety attacks.
Yep.
Can anxiety attacks cause someone to go into AFib?
It can, and it feels some of the symptoms overlap as well. So everything that you have and have experienced can be related to atrial fibrillation. Asymptomatic, symptomatic, anxiety, it all overlaps.
Thank you, Gene. And over to Dennis. Dennis, this will be the last call. What do you got?
Oh, I've just had my fourth stent put in. And they put me, prior I had three stents, they put me on Xarelto and aspirin, low dose. Now it's Xarelto and Plavix. Am I on that for the rest of my life?
I'm not sure. Do you have atrial fibrillation?
Yes, I do.
So, yeah, most likely those two medicines for the rest of your life.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, maybe we can get one more in. Joanne in Pleasant Valley. Joanne in Pleasant Valley, you got to be really fast. Go ahead.
Yeah. My father passed away suddenly, instantly, 70 years old, 22 years ago, from what you were told was ventricular fibrillation, enlarged heart, mm-hmm. tachycardia, something. My sister and I'm 68, she's 65. What's a test we should have, or would an echocardiogram have shown if we have this inherited problem?
It's certainly worth sort of talking to someone about all of the options. There's echocardiograms, the electrocardiogram. There's even genetic testing that can be done. A lot of it depends on the circumstances of your dad's passing. So I think sort of checking in with a cardiologist or electrophysiologist is your best bet.
Joanne, thank you. Okay, we're out of time. I want to thank everyone who called in. I'd also like to thank Dr. David Steckman of Albany Medical Center for joining us today. Underwriting support for Vox Pop comes from MVP Healthcare, working to meet the health insurance needs of members on their terms. More information at MVPHealthcare.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Joe Makowicz. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Chartok. And stay tuned now for just a little extra music and the Media Project.